My name is Andrew Westgarth. I'm a program manager on Azure App Service. And welcome to this session today on managing app service on Azure Stack like a boss. For translation, like a boss means just pretty much you know everything you need to know to be able to do your job in Excel. I've had some feedback that it doesn't always translate very well, so there we go. A public service announcement. This side of the room gets very, very cool. So if you find that you're a bit too cold, this side is a bit warmer, so feel free to move around. You'll probably get warmer just by moving, so there we go. Excuse me. Okay, so I'm going to run through the brief overview of what I'm going to cover today. I'm going to give an overview of what App Service is, just to give a bit of an update, just to join up some dots in between understanding. I'll do a brief overview of Azure Stack. I'm sure you've heard quite a bit about it this week since the keynote on Monday. We'll look at some core App Service concepts, because as administrators, it's really important that you understand these to a deep level. So that when tenants ask how things are configured or look for guidance on how they do that, or you build a service offering as a service provider or an enterprise, you're fully aware. I'm going to give you a peek into App Service on Azure Stack Preview 2. We haven't released the resource provider yet for TP2, but we will be releasing it in the next few weeks. So everything you see today, you will be able to do in a couple of weeks. I'll give an overview of the architecture of App Service on Azure Stack. It's pretty much the same as the public service that we run, but given that we're running directly on IaaS, it's slightly different. And then the bulk of the talk is going through administration scenarios. So I've got about 8 different scenarios, which are key important things that you need to do once you get hold of the system in order to run it successfully. And these are the elements that we're continually adding. So Azure App Service itself is growing at quite a successful rate, and we roll out scale units on a daily, if not hourly, basis around the world. So we have a good experience of actually running this as a live 24/7 support system, and every engineer and program manager on the team participates in a servicing loop quite regularly. So we all get insight into any issues that customers are experiencing or the platform's experiencing. And then hopefully we'll have some time for Q&A at the end. So the administration scenarios that I'm going to cover today are deployment of the resource provider and give you an idea of how we've changed that. And then we'll step on to how you can troubleshoot and monitor the actual deployment itself so that if something was to go wrong, you know how to figure out what's gone wrong and generate and gather the required logs if you need to reach out to us for support. We'll go through creating custom worker tiers and SKUs, which are key underpinnings of a service offering, and then adding the capacity to the service so that you can serve multiple tenants. In TP2, we're adding the ability for tenants to integrate with their source control providers. But as admins, you need to do some configuration to enable that feature. In public app service, we do that, so you never see that side. So that's just an indication of some of the things coming along that you need to be aware of. I'm going to briefly talk on our integration scenario for custom DNS, and then I'm going to give you some early guidance on what we consider best practice for high availability. That is by no means prescriptive, and we will firm that up as we get closer to GA. But based on what we've experienced in the past and based on the model that we have, it's just some guidance so you can start thinking about it as you start to look to adopt the resource provider. So what is App Service? Azure App Service is a platform as a service offering from Microsoft Azure, and you can create web, mobile and API apps for any platform or any device. Integrate those apps with SaaS solutions, connect with on-premise applications, very relevant to this audience, and automate business processes. So when we talk to customers, small and large, about their business customers and cloud adoption, we either hear they use the cloud to enable their employees to be more productive and to engage with their customers in innovative ways. So they want large scale, but at elastic scale, and they want it quick. They want to focus on their offering, not focused on all the infrastructure. But at the bottom of all this is the app, and that's what App Service really focuses on. It enables IT organizations, service providers, developers, marketing departments to just focus on what they actually want to achieve with their app and not have to worry about tying into any heavy configuration or proprietary templating and things like that. So it means that all they need to do is focus on their app, and then we make the whole experience, the deployment, the monitoring, the scale very easy. And we're bringing that to you as service providers and enterprises. Some examples of customers who are successfully using the Azure product today. Iberia Express, large European airline, handle all of their ticketing and their website hosted on our service. And then closer to home, NASCAR host a web app which is running PHP and has a number of APIs and takes advantage of a number of services within both App Service but Azure to provide a highly scalable web and mobile application and system so that customers can engage with the brand and engage with the championship as it goes on through the season. App Service features in the public product are being added at a quite astounding scale. I think it's we launch two or three features probably every month. We're deploying quite frequently, so customers get the advantage of our rapid development. And you as service providers will get advantage of take advantage of the investment that we make in this product. So today, as you'll understand with the previews, there's a little bit of a gap between what you get in public Azure and what's available in the previews. But we're constantly trying to close that gap for when we come to GA. So some elements that you'll see today that I'll mention, Azure Active Directory integration, we've got that in TP2. We've got full web job support. We take advantage of RBAC because we're on the Azure platform. Certificate support, site diagnostics, all things that you get out of the box with our platform. What is Azure Stack? Azure Stack is the power of Azure in your data center. And the idea, the main thing is here is we're giving you the ability to develop for both a platform that is consistent on-prem as it is off-prem, be it in the public cloud. There may be various reasons why you can't go to public cloud, regulatory compliance, legislation on where data resides, and various other reasons why you want Azure Stack in your premise. So what does a hybrid cloud look like? The key thing is that the end user experience needs to be consistent, whether you're in the public cloud or whether you're on-premise. It has a cloud application model so that you can take advantage of the distributed style of systems and architecture that you need for a cloud model, but it doesn't matter whether you're deploying either way. It has key infrastructure services and platform services, and it's built on top of cloud infrastructure, the direction that most of the infrastructure in the world is going to. So Microsoft's offering in this realm is you have Microsoft Azure, which is our public cloud, on-premise or in a service provider in your local area, you have Microsoft Azure Stack, so that could be private or hosted cloud. And the key thing is they're the same tools, so Portal, PowerShell, Visual Studio, can be used across so you can share skills. You can take advantage of the Azure Resource Manager and have one method of deployment. And you can take advantage of the same services in either stack. So for GA, Azure Stack is targeting IaaS and PaaS services. of compute, networking, and storage, which are the underpinnings of Azure that we all need. And then App Service, our product, we will be there at GA with the rest of Azure Stack. And then there's some preview features of Service Fabric coming as well. But it's all cloud-inspired infrastructure, so we've worked with our partners to get to that end. So there, just to clarify, your developers are working in one Azure ecosystem, take advantage of the same systems, unified app development, and from an IT perspective, you've got the Azure services in your data center. I'm going to skip through this one and this one, because I'm sure you've seen these through the week. And I think the one of the strongest messages behind this whole story of our hybrid cloud are these next two slides, and it's one Azure ecosystem. So you have the same deployment model, we have a wide variety of Windows and Linux VM images on the background, we have third-party services that we can bring on board because it's a consistent application development model and service offering, and then you can use various source control services to store and back-end all of those. And I think this slide is probably one of the most powerful of why Azure Stack could be fantastic for all of your businesses. So today we have 34 Azure regions, more than AWS and Google combined. And we are, you know, scaling that out as much as we can. But then if you add in the hundreds of service providers around the world, then that map starts to get a bit more covered. And this is Azure, so it doesn't matter whether you're deploying in public cloud, you're deploying onto a service provider, you're deploying into your enterprise, look at the reach. So not only in terms of making your internal development great, your recruitment strategies are great because you're looking for consistent skills over the board, and you're developing once but deploying to many different types of environments. App Service on Azure Stack Preview 2. As I mentioned, this will be coming in the next couple of weeks. We're just finalizing, and the team's hard at work back in Redmond. So the key thing here is we work off the same code base. So if you've never come across this before in, say, the predecessor WAP websites, we use the same code base, whether it's in public Azure or whether it's in the private cloud product in Azure Stack. So that enables us to bring the features to you quickly, not always easily, but we can bring the features to you, and that's where you get the investment. With TP2, we're bringing mobile and API apps. So with Preview 1, we only shipped web app templates, but now we've added the capability for you to do the mobile backends for your mobile apps. So if you've got internal work and you want to connect them via VPN, that kind of thing, or you're a service provider, and you want to offer this capability, then that is coming in the next preview. API apps are a simple way of getting up and running with, say, web APIs that expose Swagger front-end service definitions, and we give you the benefit of high scale very, very easily. Deployment slots. So App Service have this capability where you can set up multiple slots for your app and deploy to those. So you could have a staging, a UAT, a development. And then we also have the ability to auto-swap and swap between each so that you can have a continuous delivery pipeline. We're bringing deployment sources to TP2. So key to mention there is we support GitHub, OneDrive, local Git, external repositories, Bitbucket, Dropbox, and OneDrive. A lot of these features have not been available on-prem previously. We've had some support for deployment sources, but not full. So we're excited to bring that and see how that is received. We have a feature we call internally EasyAuth, which is enabling application developers to configure their apps to take advantage of authentication and authorization rules backed by Azure Active Directory, Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Microsoft account. But we have a portal experience which makes that very easy to configure. And we're delighted to say that we're bringing that feature into Azure Stack App Service on Azure Stack Preview 2. Backup, so you can, because we now have Azure Stack Storage underpinning everything in the platform, we are able to offer the backup facility. So that will back up to an Azure Stack Storage account, and that way you can have some sort of, some level of backups between releases or per day, depending on what you're doing with your application. We are bringing manual scale up and scale out. We still have a little bit of work to do the full auto scale feature, but you can scale out in terms of being able to scale out to multiple instances at the click of a few buttons, or scale up to a larger size instance, again, through the portal. Web jobs, the key thing here is we've supported web jobs in websites since, I think it was UR6, but we've never been able to fully support the SDK because we didn't have the components in the infrastructure that we were deployed on top of, but now we can fully support that. So that means that it just builds on the consistent app development model in that you're not having to think to doing things differently whether you're in the public or the private cloud. Admin capabilities, we've improved our deployment experience. So can I get an idea from the room? How many people use public app service, so the public cloud product? Okay. How many of you have experience of Windows Azure Pack websites? Okay, a few more. How many of you have deployed the web apps resource provider in Azure Stack TP1 or tried to deploy it? Okay. How many tried and gave up? How many tried and succeeded? I assume everybody else. Okay. And how many of you have never looked at Azure Stack before this week? Probably a lot more. Okay. So we're bringing an improved deployment experience. One of the things that we had problems with initially with our very first release, we had customers hit a lot of speed bumps. And we took the feedback in, and we really listened, and we made sure that that wasn't so much of an issue for the refresh, but we still know that some customers experienced speed bumps again with the refresh that we released in April, and we've hardened that a bit further. In terms of capabilities, we're adding the ability in the admin resource provider to view the properties and system config, create and manage worker tiers and SKUs directly from within the portal. We're adding the capability to deploy custom software to your workers. So in public app service, because of the sandbox and security model, you cannot deploy custom components that are not bin deployable with your app. But we recognize that enterprises sometimes have components or internally developed libraries that you need to run. So we've added that capability. It's in TP2, and we're interested to get your feedback on how that works and if you see any issues or you have any further needs for that. So that's a key differentiator. We have an ability to manage those roles through the Azure portal, the Azure Stack portal, rather. And we have also integrated the capability to actually spin up additional roles directly from within the portal. So previously, you had to provision the infrastructure first and then configure. In this preview, we've added the capability for you to do it at the end of a few button clicks. It's restricted to web workers at the moment, but for as we go further through the product lifecycle, we will be adding that for the other types of roles, and the roles of which I will be covering shortly. You have the ability to configure IPSSL, the IP block list, and we have a very early implementation of our custom DNS integration. So some core app service concepts. An app service plan is a pricing container for applications, and each subscription can have multiple ASPs. So the idea behind this is an app service plan represents a set of features and capacities that you can share across multiple apps. So this is, if you think about it, we have, We have, today in public Azure, we have 5 pricing tiers. So we have free, shared, basic, standard, and premium. And each one has its own capabilities. And an app service plan is made up of those capabilities. If your plan is configured to use 2 small instances in the standard service tier, that is encapsulated in your app service plan. And the idea is you can, so as a resource group is a grouping of resources, so physical assets. When you deploy into an app service plan, it's effectively the instance that you're deploying to. So it, and say if you had 2 instances at standard level, you have 2 web workers running your workload. One of the common misconceptions with an app service plan is that you deploy a single app per app service plan. But if you think about it, you've got a machine sitting there doing work for you, and that's not really getting full benefit, and you're paying a lot more money than you need to. So the idea between an app service plan is a demarcation of workload. And you can run more than one application on that app service plan, and you can have multiple app service plans per subscription. Now, a worker tier is the next level down. So a worker tier is a description for the web workers that host applications with an app service. In app service on Azure Stack, these can be customized. So in the public service, you can't do anything with these because we set them. We're the service provider. And in this, you can set the cores and the memory characteristics. So you can set what sizes of VMs are available. So when we get to GA, if you've got the hardware capability to provide the highly powerful GPU-based VMs, then you could set a custom worker tier of that capability. And this is at the level where you deploy custom software. So if you have a series of components that you want to deploy, you define a custom worker tier which has that capability. So your worker tier might be, I've got shared or I've got dedicated resource, but they can do different things, and it's a way that you can differentiate your service offering against your competitors. And then finally, SKUs. So I was always told it was a stock control unit, but I never spelled control with a K. But there we go. Stock keeping unit, that's it, isn't it? Pricing structure. So this is where you really get to differentiate your service offering, be that internal or be that external. Because if you're internal, obviously you may want to cross-charge for these services to different departments depending on what capabilities you have and what we can do there. So the administrator here defines the pricing and feature set. So you can see on the screen there that we have a screenshot of all of the Azure app service plans that we have in the public cloud. And you can see differences between the premium set, the standard, the basic, the shared, and the free. And it's basically about defining your offering and you control this. Out of the box with the preview, we set some, but then it's up to you to go and configure to what you like. So you may decide that SSL for you, I'm gonna give it to everybody because I want to. We don't make that decision, so at free and shared level, you can't have an SSL binding on a site. But you may decide to do something different. You may decide that certain SKUs can't make use of PHP or Java or ASP.NET. You may put a premium on certain things, and that's what that's all about. Digging into the architecture of app service on Azure Stack, we have 6 main roles. So the first thing you'll find is we have what we call a controller. And the controller is there to sit and manage and monitor app service on the Azure Stack Cloud. And that role is to perform the WinRM functions across those roles to actually do the deployment of role software and to make sure that everything is healthy with inside the farm. We have a file server. And as you'll note there, there's a nice big asterisk near the file server. In the previews, we deploy a file server for you. And it's a basic, simple Windows file server with a UNC share that we make use of. As we get towards GA, what's key to note here is For HA, we advise that you deploy either a SOFS type file server and make use of that, and there's templates for you to do that in Azure Stack itself. Or if you have, say, a NetApp device or a NAS drive or a SAN, we can take advantage of that. That's one key thing that could potentially help you adopt App Service on Azure Stack sooner. Because at the end of the day, we need a UNC share and we need a file user that's able to create directories and manipulate the storage. As I say, for the previews, we deploy one single role in every role, because if you're running on a single node POC, we don't want to consume all your cores, all your storage, all your memory. So we try and keep our footprint as small as we possibly can. As we get closer to GA, we'll give you more control over how many of these roles you deploy automatically. And that will become clearer as we go through this session as to why that's important. We have a management role, which is where we host the API, the UI extensions, so all the tenant portal and the admin portal is all hosted on that management role. It's doing increasingly more for us as a service. We have a front end, which is our load balancer. So behind all of the software load balancers in Azure Stack, we also have our load balancer for our service, which dynamically decides which web workers the requests need to go to based on algorithms inside our code. We have a publisher, which effectively just exposes an FTP and a web deploy endpoint for your workers, and that helps to deploy all of your file content onto the file server. And then the web workers is where the real meat and potatoes are. These are the things that are doing your web hosting and the application hosting, the APIs, mobile, everything is hosted using these workers. So this diagram shows a bit of a default deployment and some of the idea of where we have different endpoints and different inputs. So we have two databases backed. The documentation advises you to use SQLRP. Today, you can use any SQL server you like. So all it is a connection string that we're building. So as long as you've got a SQL server, then we're golden. And also the file server. You can't change the file server today, but we'll be adding that in a future preview. So by default, we advise you to have multiple front ends for sharing load, depending on how many requests you have coming in. And the key thing is to have many, many web workers. That's the real size of our deployment, and that's what I'm going to talk about adding capacity for. And more, the management role needs to be scaled as well, because that is doing more and more workload. And as I'll demonstrate later, there are times when we have to take it out of rotation. And if you've only got one, that can make it quite difficult to actually administer the service until it comes back up. So a site creation flow. A customer creates a site via the Azure Stack portal or via a REST call, and the ARM request is passed on to the management role. The request is forwarded to our resource provider API, and the management role receives the request and creates the site in the hosting database and creates the content directory in the file server. But you'll note then we haven't touched web workers yet because we haven't got any traffic coming in, so we don't need to actually deploy anything yet. Customer says, I want to put some content in there. So they will publish the content via FTP, for example. The publisher receives the content. The FTP extension then looks up where that site's content is stored in the file server. We create a session, and then we upload the content direct to the file server. Then the first request. So the customer makes a request to the website. The front end receives the request. We contact the data service, which is running on the management role. And then the data service retrieves those details from our hosting database. So it's all dynamically provisioning and allocates the workers for the serving requests to the site as required. If there's already been requests, those workers are already allocated. So unless those workers are unhealthy, it wouldn't reallocate the workload to other servers. The front end uses this information to route the traffic, and then the web worker serves the request. And that's a very simplistic but a great overview of how we go from site creation to first request. So admin scenarios. Now we start doing more demos and I stop talking quite so much. Our deployment has evolved. TP1, the very first release that we did of the web apps resource provider, as we were terming it back then, was heavily PowerShell based. It was heavily generate a PowerShell template, put in a load of parameters. We had speed bumps, we had issues. There was, we took the feedback on. And with WAP websites, Azure Pack websites, we have a nice installer. And because we're working from the same code base, we decided let's take advantage of that and make it really, really simple for customers to deploy. So today, we have an easy-to-use installer and we have 4 scripts for TP2. Those scripts, unfortunately, we can't, at this moment, put them into the installer because of technical reasons. But as we get closer, we are constantly trying to make this as simple as possible. We're also trying to make it as configurable as possible. So as I mentioned, as we go further, we'll try and make this so you can really take control of your deployment, for your initial deployment, straight away, rather than just having to accept what we give you. So I'm just going to switch to my machine, and I'll just give you a quick overview of deployment of App Service on Azure Stack. Let's just go to my console VM. May have gone to sleep. Come on. Is that one? I've got 2. Hopefully this one's better. Let's see. Okay, so when you download this from our download center when we release the links, you get App Service XE, which is our installer. You get a series of help scripts. So you can see. Trying to make it readable. So we need a couple of certificates. So we need a certificate for the tenant endpoint, so web apps. We need a certificate for the management role. And we also need a copy of the certification authority certificate from Azure Stack itself. So that's the first step. Then we run the installer. Then we need to do the DNS registration with inside Azure Stack. Then we need to register the resource provider. And finally, we need to register our templates. So when you go file, click new web app, API app, mobile app, we just register those as well. They're relatively straightforward. I'll bring up the App Service XE. So this is very much a traditional next kind of affair. We deploy App Service on your Azure Stack Cloud. We have to present you with EULAs, 2 sets of EULAs. So we have a Microsoft EULA for the service, but then we use a variety of open source products. It's not used in the core product, but it's deployed onto the workers so you can host things like PHP, Node.js, and various other things. So we have to ask you to accept. Oh, great, thank you. Let's see if it, no, it's not going to let me go past. Let me try the other machine. If this doesn't work, I'm just going to move forward because I don't want to spend too long on this. So what we tried to do with this is reduce the amount of potential for mistakes. So we have checks now with inside the installer to check for that your SQL connection string is fine and valid, and then we can connect, rather than trying the deployment and then failing halfway through and saying, no, your connection string was duff. We make sure that we can access the certificates before we start deploying. because that was a common thing that customers hit. We want to make sure that's definitely gone. If you want to see that piece, I can show you it afterwards because I've got a way of getting around that issue. We also do the authentication with Azure AD so that we can talk to the other RPs with inside Azure Stack, and we just prompt you for those credentials. And there's a new change with TP2 where we need to get the Azure application ID for the deployment as well, and we've automated that as well. So we're trying to make it as simple as possible to reduce the friction that you potentially see, and because we had so many issues originally. So. So to monitor and troubleshoot, you have a variety of different things to look at, and different stages when the deployment can fail. So the deployment could experience an issue during the installation process. So once you get through, past the validation, and we actually kick off the deployment, we have multiple steps gated with inside the installer that we report on, and we provide useful error messages and stages at which you may fail. For example, one key one, if you have a failed deployment and try and redeploy, if the app service local resource group that we create exists, we stop, because we need that resource group to be deleted before we carry on. And obviously, we don't want to be destructive to your system, so we want to give you the control to delete that first. In future releases, we're going to add the capability that you define the resource group. So if you wanted to run this multiple times, then you can do, and you wouldn't be hit by that. Other issues, occasionally, if the internet connection fails when downloading one of the open source packages, then that could be reported. The resource group deployment view is probably the best way to see everything deployed and gives you an idea of when something failed. We have Azure Stack logs, which I'm going to show you where to find those. The App Service Resource Provider Administration tool that can provide you with information. We also have a traditional management console deployed on our controller role, where you can also look to do view. But what we're trying to do is trying to bring all the functionality out of that into the portal, so you don't actually have to remote onto the machines. You want to try and make it as little touch as possible, and then we can revert all the way back to event logs. So let's have a look. Which one am I on? 110. Okay. So the resource group for the App Service Resource Provider is App Service Local. If we were deploying to multiple regions, that would be App Service whatever region you've just deployed to. That's our naming convention. You'll see here we have some availability sets, VMs that are created, the various NICs, the software load balancer, the NSG, all of the security. So with inside here, you can get information on the deployment. And if you're familiar with Azure, this is quite a standard way of figuring out what went wrong. So one of the issues that we had in preview one was the VMs weren't created. If the VMs aren't created, we've got nothing to deploy on top of. So this is things that the products worked on over time, and we've got over that. So the key thing is to remember is we are deploying on top of the compute, network, and storage resource provider. So we need resources from them before we can actually do any work. So you can dig in via the portal, via the deployment logs, to see if there was an issue with inside creating one of the resources. That's your first step. After that, if I go onto the controller machine, I've got a remote desktop session here already. Come on. Wow, this has really gone to sleep, hasn't it? That one's better. Okay. So in the same folder that you run the installer, we have a log file. So that's one element that you can start with when you experience problems in the installation. But also, once components are deployed onto the instance in Azure Stack, there is a folder called packages. And in here is what we call a custom script extension. And this is how we trigger our deployment onto the roles that we create. And in there is a status file. And that gives us information about what happened with the deployment, whether it passed successfully, and whether the actual deployment has moved on from there. So that's one element. The other element I'm going to skip to the really advanced one, this is our MMC snap-in. And this we've had since we deployed WAP websites, one of the updates, I think, about a year and a half ago. And because we're off the same code base, we can take advantage of this. And some people prefer to be able to dig right in to see the issue. So if I go into any one of these roles, I can see the logs, and I can see what's happening on that instance and what might have failed. Also, it's important for you to see is there's a status. So we can actually see whether that's ready to receive traffic, ready to run, whether it's in a repair mode, whether it's faulted, etc. But that's not the only place you can see this information, because if TP2, no, I don't want to do any updates, thank you. We can show this with inside the portal. So when you browse for resource providers, you will find all of the resource providers that are deployed onto your Azure Stack system, storage, network, compute, and you'll see us, App Service Resource Provider. Within here, you will see metrics of how the system is running, whether it's under load in terms of memory, CPU, etc. And then you can dig into roles. So we're working on the UI for this, because I've been working with it a lot lately, and I'm still not happy with it. In fact, I'm far from happy with it. But as you dig into the type of role, you can see the same sort of information that you can see in the MMC snap-in. So, as you can see, quite a few clicks later. So you get the same information in the portal as you do in the MMC snap-in. You can see the versions, you can see whether they're ready, and you can see the name. Currently it's an IP address. And if this pane would load, we can see the log messages as well. I'm going to leave that spinning while I continue talking through the next step. What we're trying to do with that, the resource provider experience for admins, is try and bring all of the functionality out of the product up into that portal. And as the product is expanded and we strengthen it as it goes further forward, and by strengthen I mean adding the capabilities for you guys in Azure Stack, what we're trying to do is take advantage of all the experience that we have running this product around the world 24/7, and where we use an internal tool, trying to reimagine something that actually does the same job for you guys. We don't have everything yet. We're only at TP2, but we're constantly evolving, constantly working hard back in Redmond to get you those capabilities. Custom worker tiers. So custom worker tiers give you as administrators the ability to deploy custom workloads. And as I mentioned earlier, they're a way of differentiating your offering. So you can deploy internal assemblies. So you may have assemblies that only marketing need to use, or only R&D need to use. That's probably more common. And you can set up groups of workers that are just for them. You can deploy non-core application stacks. So we don't ship the application stacks for Go and Ruby. On-premise, we don't ship Java for legal reasons. So there's no reason why you couldn't define your own worker tiers that already have those built in, because you're not distributing the application. And you could also deploy components not shipped in the box. For example, Oracle clients, compression engines, .NET components, that sort of thing. Anything needs to be GAC registered on the box. Things that you can't do in public app service. And then we have custom SKUs. Now, as I mentioned before, you can define the features and the quotas of a SKU, and it's another way to more ways for you to differentiate, and this is why we focus so much on it because we understand you don't just want to take our product down on-prem and just offer that because it's just the same sort of thing, just depends on legislative reasons or isolation why you would want to do that. And the SKUs are tied to your worker tier. So the SKUs are deployed on a worker tier that you set. And finally, this piece, before we go and do a demo of this, you need to add capacity. So in order to serve all of these SKUs and the worker tiers, you actually need to have the web workers to actually take the workload and be able to offer a service to your customers. This is often the first task for most customers and most administrators who've actually looked at the resource provider. And we now have multiple ways to add more capacity. In the past, you had to provision the VMs yourself and then tell us where they were, and then we took over and we did everything we needed to. That model still exists, but you can either do that manually by click, add the resources through the portal, or you could script an ARM template to do it. So, and finally, in TP2, we're adding the capability at a maximum of 10 per go. We can create 10 VMs for you so that you can use them as web workers. The controller then takes over once that machine is available, and we deploy the required runtimes and workload that we need to. So let's have a look at how that really works. So I'm going to create a SKU. Let's create a worker tier first. I was right. So we need to have the worker tiers in place so that SKUs can be deployed on top of them. So let's go and create a new Ignite tier. Here I can make a decision between whether it's shared or dedicated. So traditionally our model is, if you're in a free SKU, we deploy those onto shared workers, so multiple customers can be deployed on there at once, and they're isolated by the sandbox that we have in the product, but they are still deployed on the same workers as many others. And then you have the concept of dedicated. So that means when somebody creates an app service plan and chooses a dedicated SKU, and that is just for them, it's for nobody else, and that's what they become available for. So we create a dedicated. Today, in our UI, you can define the cores and the memory. That doesn't translate into the VM that we actually create. We still only create equivalent of an A1 VM. For the next preview after the one we're releasing soon, you will be able to pick the sizes that are available to the compute resource provider. So in the same way as you create a virtual machine by clicking new virtual machine and picking the size, we will integrate with that capability and offer those sizes back to you. We have the ability for you to choose an OS. Please don't choose 2016 yet. We are working on making sure that our full compatibility is there, but it's just a way of showing that this is capable and that's the direction that we are going in. We deploy on 2012 R2 by default. And then there is also the capability to add the custom software. So there's two ways of doing this. You can do it through the management blade for custom software, add it and then assign. Or when you're creating a worker tier, you can go and browse for the package, tell us where it is, we'll upload it, and then when we create the workers and roll them out, then we automatically deploy that. If you define custom software, we amend the feed for that worker tier internally, and then every time you scale out or add additional resource, we do that deployment for you, so you don't need to worry about it. If you decide to remove it from a worker tier, we do that work as well to remove. So I'm just going to create it without custom software today. And that's nice and quick. Okay, so there we go, we see it. We can see we've got a dedicated worker tier. We don't have any workers assigned to that at the moment, and we certainly don't have any available. But you'll see in the other worker tiers there, Ignite demo tier, we have two workers ready and waiting in small, same, and in shared as well. So the next step is to create the SKU. So you'll see there, free, shared, standard, the ones that I said we ship with. Is that proving to be quite small? Let me see if I can, there we go. So I've already previously defined one for the Ignite demo that I was playing around with earlier. And now we're going to create a new one now. And I'll do it this size so I can zoom in. And we give it a name. And I can choose a color. So we have this concept in Azure that each pricing SKU has a color. So it's easy recognizable and easy spottable. We'll probably add more colors ready for release, but today we just have a few. And then we choose that it's a dedicated type of compute. And then we choose the type of the worker tiers that this SKU can be deployed onto. So I can just use small, medium, or large, or I could have a worker tier which has a custom component on, which say our Atlanta 1 has a custom compression engine on, and that's where I want to deploy to, but I may also have Atlanta 1 small, Atlanta 1 small, medium, et cetera, or A1, A2, A3, et cetera. So we'll just select the one this time, and then we'll click OK. Then in the background, we're doing the wire up, and there we go. That's nice and simple. Then we get to the real crux of the workload, and that is adding roles. So you can see we've got a number of roles already in the system. We still support the ability to provision the VMs and then just tell us where they are. In Azure Stack, we just need an IP address. So give us the internal IP for that web worker or that management role or the controller, and we take care of everything in the background. So you can see there we can choose those. We think that this worker, the requirements that we have on the machine are not valid for Azure Stack, so we'll be removing this text, but we just want to validate before we do that. But what I really want to show you today is this new capability. Because it wasn't very clear when we launched the preview one of how to do this. And so we took the feedback and we thought, well, we really integrated. It's an integrated platform. We're sitting on top of Azure Stack. We know we've got compute. We know we've got networking. And we know we've got storage. So let's do it ourselves. So we give you the capability to scale up 10 workers. And then you can define the tier that they were going to be deployed into. So if you have configured anything like custom software, then we automatically deploy that as soon as those workers are ready. I will kick off 2, and we'll do that. And what that's doing is that's submitting an ARM deployment to Azure Stack with all of the configuration and everything required, so the network security groups, the NICs, all the different things that we need. And in the background, that will spin up those workers and then start our deployment. And then they will eventually show up in the roles blade with inside the resource provider. A worker role takes about an hour and 20 minutes to come up. So the VM itself is created the same speed as any other VM in Azure Stack. But we have quite a large payload to deploy onto that machine. So if you think about it, we've got to make sure that .NET framework's up to date. We've got all of the PHP libraries, the caching algorithms, Node.js, the variety of different versions of NPM and Node that we need to support. So they all go on there. Some things that we are working on ways in which we can speed that up and give you more control over how that's done, but we're not there yet. So those machines will take quite a while to come up. And once they're marked as ready, then customers can deploy their applications into those SKUs. So if I go and create new web app, I think our VPN's getting swamped. Word of note, if you deploy custom software to an existing worker tier, and you already have workers deployed in that worker tier, you need to repair all of those workers. So that means on a rotation basis, we will take them out of rotation, install the software, bring them back up ready for them to receive workloads. It's just something you need to factor into when you're making changes. Sometimes it does require that those roles are repaired for the workloads to actually go on board. This is running on a single node in Redmond on quite a high density deployment on the back end. So unfortunately the performance I deployed this onto a machine downstairs, so on the Azure Stack booth last night, and the performance is a lot better. It's a lot faster. The one thing that I will say is, when you deploy, I'd advise that you add additional management roles, because the management role is doing all of this work. So the work here in these blades is not Azure Stack just on its own. It's actually our resource provider. So the management role hosts this experience, so the tenant experience, it hosts the admin experience, plus the ARM APIs for app service, plus our APIs as well from a management point of view. So it's doing a lot of work. So my advice to you is if you're seeing slowdowns, it's fairly quick, like when you're on the same network. It's fairly quick and you won't see a problem, but if you do need additional performance, add an additional management role. And then you'll see the load being shared between the two. The other thing is this has gone quite cold while I've been talking. So we're tweaking, we're adding performance tests, but we're not there yet today. It's not at this point. See there, the pricing blade comes from our management role. And our management role is now warm because I've been doing quite a lot of other things to it. So it is quite responsive when you've been using the system, but if you leave it go stale, as in any web app at the moment, it's shutting itself down and there's a bit of a startup time. So you'll see there an example of where the customer would come in and pick the SKU that's deployed on your worker tiers. So you'll see there we've got Ignite Demo, Small, Medium, and Large, and that's the one that I created earlier today. And the one that I've just created as we walk through is the Atlanta SKU at the bottom. So this is where the customer interacts with that configuration that you've made and chooses that and deploys. Yes, there will be pricing displayed there in the final release. So we have a usage engine built in that we've already got for WAP websites, and we'll be adapting that for app service on Azure Stack so that you can provide that capability. It's just not there in the preview. At the moment, the preview, the goal, certainly for 1 and 2, is proving the deployment model, proving the technical capabilities, and closing the gap in terms of tenant features, but also increasing the capabilities of the admin resource provider so that you can actually run this as a proper service. And to give you some insight, we do have some of this dog-fooded internally. So there are divisions inside Microsoft that actually run the predecessor WAP websites on a large scale. And we constantly work with them on improvements and things which also feed into the customer product. So it's a big one life cycle. So we do have a lot of experience of running this. Let's go back to the slides. One new capability that we've brought that is key for our product. So one of the key things with App Service is it makes it really, really simple to get your app up and running, get it deployed. And most companies, especially at enterprise level, have some form of deployment source control in the back end. TP1, we didn't have this capability. TP1 was quite lightweight, so we've added quite a bit in TP2. You can configure the deployment sources now via the admin portal. So we've added that in recent days, and you can configure via PowerShell. Now, this is a multi-stage process because you need to get the applications to trust you. So I'll walk through this. If you've done this, if you've administered WAP websites before, then you'll have seen something similar because you would have had to have done this to have that capability there as well. So I'm just going to open up two tabs while we're talking. One is to OneDrive, and the other is to our resource provider. So which build? No, I need the other build. My machine's completely locked up right now. So let's come back to this, because while that's deciding what it's doing, I can talk about the next step and we'll come back to the deployment sources, because I know we're running down the clock. Custom DNS integration. With TP2, we're releasing this feature. And today there are three distinct modes. So there's no DNS integration in the preview out of the box. And we just work with the internal DNS inside Azure Stack itself. But we're also offering the capability to use built-in, and today it's Windows Server 2012 R2 DNS. And also, we're adding the capability to do custom DNS. So this means that we can integrate with your systems. And the main reasons why we offer this is it's for the modes of how the system behaves when certain actions are performed. So for example, when a site is created or a site is deleted or IPSSL is enabled, then we need to have some form of interactions with DNS. I will be writing up the detailed documentation on how to take a look at this feature, and that will ship with the product. But it's just to give you an idea that we are aware of this. We don't have full support for all of the different types of custom DNS offerings, but we are increasing that reach and increasing the testing that we do as we get closer to the release of the product. Some high availability guidance. So final guidance will come as we get closer to release. Today, our initial guidance is deploy multiple instances of roles for resilience and performance. So I've already touched on the management role. So one of the elements that I'll cover when we do the deployment sources is that management role needs to be repaired to take the client ID and secret. While you're repairing that role, there's no tenant experience, there's no admin experience, there's no ARM endpoint. So if you've got multiple, we'll repair one at a time and then go through so your service doesn't go down. The reason, as I've said before, the reason why we don't come out of the box like that is because if you're deploying on a single one node, we don't want to use all your resources because you may have other RPs with deployed or other VMs, etc. So we want to make sure that you've got full control. You can deploy multiple controllers, and that's what we'd advise in a HA, so that if one needs to be taken down for Windows updates or anything like that, then the other one's still up. Workers, it's pretty obvious, you need lots of those. That's the main meat and potatoes of the application. The load balancer, you need to increase those in terms of when the system is getting under high load, but you don't need so many of those compared to the web workers. The FTP server, yeah, it depends on how high your traffic is on that endpoint. Because when we do source control deployment, the source control deployment is direct to the worker. directly through the worker, so we don't actually go through the FTP role. If you have existing infrastructure in place, which I imagine from an enterprise or service provider level you already do, you can take advantage of your SQL Server cluster, so you've got high availability on your database on the back end, and the same with your file server. So today we have support for standalone file server, clustered, SOFS, NAS, Storage Space Direct, and NAS devices. And we are constantly testing, adding more capability there, we'd love to hear of any other devices that you need to have added to that list. We also support NetApp, and some we have done some initial exploration with Linux-based file servers as well. There's slight changes in the configuration that we need for all Linux file shares. So let's see if I can get this machine up and running. Close program, go on. Kill it. Yep. Okay. I can show you on the other machine what the client sees. So this is a tenant, so I'm logged in as a tenant. Let's create a web app. I'm just putting garbage in for titles because I'll be destroying this afterwards. Obviously use best practice in your resource groups actually meaning something, and for your grouping of resources, the same with your app service plans. So that deployment is kicked off in the background, and what I'm going to do is, see, I think that machine's terminal. So I can't show you the portal integration, but I can show you the PowerShell. So earlier today, I configured this application to connect with OneDrive. So for OneDrive, we need a client ID and a secret, and these are exchanged for an OAuth token with the OneDrive API to be able to say, yes, App Service on Azure Stack can come and talk to OneDrive. And then from a tenant perspective, a tenant connects to their account using their credentials, so you don't ever need to know them or need to manage them, and the tenant can decide to revoke them at any one point. And it's the same for GitHub and any of the other services that we integrate with. But in the back end, we need to store this client ID in secret so we can do the token exchange. So we have the support inside via PowerShell, and then we also have the support inside our admin resource provider. Unfortunately, the machine that has the latest build, which has that capability on, has died on me. So we'll use the one from the day before, which doesn't have it. But I've still been able to do it through PowerShell. The requirement for you as an administrator is to go to OneDrive and configure the application as an integration. So I configured this earlier today, and I've given it a name. So it could be that you have multiple deployments of App Service on Azure Stack, different regions, different colos, depending on how you want to structure your service, and there we go. And I've demarcated this by part of the IP address. So I know this is on the machine 79. And then I create that, create the information. I generate a new password, which is what gives me the app secret. My OneDrive only display it once, so you have to copy and paste it off to another file and then use it. But others, GitHub, etc., you can, if you don't have time to do it at that time, you can go back and collect it. If you set up a new machine and you want the same integration, then off you go. You need to have an endpoint for the authorization of that token. And with App Service on Azure Stack, it's https://portal.azurestack.local/token-authorize. To do the initial authorization, set this up in the console VM of the Azure Stack deployment, because otherwise the azurestack.local address will not resolve because it's not publicly accessible. And then we've given the application a couple of permissions. So we said that I can read information about the user, so that way I can say, when I do the authentication from a tenant basis, I can do that. And then the other thing is I need to be able to get access to the files. I don't want read and write, but I do need to be able to read them so I can pull them down and deploy. The experience for OneDrive setting this up as a service provider is a little bit more involved than, say, GitHub. GitHub, you do the integration, you get the client ID, the app secret, the redirect URL, and then off you go. So I'm logged into Chrome here as a tenant, and this is what your customers, be they internal, be they external, or if you're familiar with public app service, you'll have seen this before. I just need to wait for it all to become. So the way that the portal loads is kind of a lazy load point of view. So we load the core, and then we constantly check to see what's available and what services are available, and then we enable them as they go up. When you get your hands on App Service on Azure Stack, you will see certain features grayed out. They grayed out either from a quota reason, because you set the quota that you can't actually use that capability, or in the product, we don't have that capability, so you can't do it. Coming up, let's go this way. Come on. Another thing key to mention, because we're working out of the same source code as the public service, this experience where the menus are on the left-hand side only recently went into the public product, and we've got it already. So normally, I had to hastily change all my screenshots this morning because they all had the menus on the right-hand side, which is the way we did it, and then I realized, oh, we're on the other way. So that's taking its sweet time to load up. So. Unfortunately, I'm not able to complete that demo today, but if anybody is really interested to see it, then I can hold back and go through it. That's no problem. But I know we're tight on time, so I don't want to hold you from any other session. So in review, the admin capabilities that we're bringing to TP2 is an improved deployment experience. That's first off. We hope that anybody that takes the time to download TP2 of Azure Stack and then decides to download TP2 of App Service on Azure Stack has a great experience and gets everything up and running without any speed bumps. If you do, please get in touch, let us know, because we want to make this better and we want to unblock you. We don't want to just lose you. Capabilities, we've been through a number of these. The view the properties, system configuration, create and maintain the worker tiers, manage deployment of custom software, the roles, increasing the number of workers that you have available for your additional capacity, configure IPSSL, block list, DNS integration, and a whole lot more. I would hope that you would feel that is a significant difference between TP1 and TP2. If you've not seen TP1, then yeah, it is. And I hope you have some good experience with it. So there's additional app service content at Azure Stack, App Service and Azure Stack content at Ignite this week. I think the last App Service session to finish is me, because the other one's going on sooner than me, but they've all been there. a newbie mistake. So there's the slide, the session times. If you don't know a lot about App Service or you want to know what the capabilities are of it in the public cloud and what might come to the private cloud, please check out those sessions on Channel 9 after the conference. And there's more Azure Stack content throughout the week. There's some more sessions this afternoon. Become a Microsoft Azure Stack Infrastructure Rockstar is the next one on the list. And templates, DevOps, and hybrid applications as we go on. If anybody has any questions, I have 49 seconds. Other than that, I will be here for a few more minutes, and then I will be heading down to the App Service booth on the floor, MS13 and MS16, where we also have Azure Functions as well. Thank you very much for taking the time to come and see the session. I hope you got something out of it. Thank you.